All right, we are back. We are back in session. Are you? Am I on? Okay.
Okay,
we're back in session. I apologize to Mrs. Polis for interrupting her questioning, but sometimes those things happen. Let's try to move forward on some of these issues with respect to, you know, just the wording of the MOU right now. We'll deal with the loan issue on item 24 later on, but let's try to all focus on the wording of the contract and the MOU and moving forward in this. Okay, so
I was just talking to our representatives, but before I say that, I want to say I do care about all children.
Yeah.
And I acknowledge and I'm grateful that the charter's in our district and that I know that there's so many accomplishments you can say about the charter and all of our other schools.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about the charter, it's about the loan. And this is what we're talking about right now and what it's going to cost our district and all of our students in the district as a whole. I was just talking to Trevin about the collateral. And the only collateral that the superintendent said that we have for these loans, because I asked her, is that the money comes straight through and we can take mm-hmm. the money off the top. This year there's going to be, or they're talking about, mid-year cuts that may be retroactive. So the money that may not all come through, what's going to happen if they don't get all of their money? Are they going to keep deferring their payment back to us? And what kind of wording can we have that to protect all of the students in our district? And and that's one of the reasons the major lenders are charging 10% because of the risk mm-hmm. that's behind loaning a charter. So what kind of language can we have in there that will, for some reason, if they cannot pay us back, that will protect us? Or and I'm not sure. I've thought about it. I don't know how to do it. And
can I just explain, because one is what the language says and how we would bring it to you. The intent of this language is that if we bring to you a recommendation to give San Jose a loan, with it we're going to be giving you, they're going to provide us, and we're going to be giving you a cash flow projection. So as we have tonight. And that cash flow projection would tell you when the loan is going to be paid, as the one tonight does in terms of deferrals. My understanding is the San Jose budget is based on the trigger, that it's not based on, it's actually a bit more conservative than ours, that their budget is already based on a trigger. So it's the worst case scenario from what I understand. So we would not, based on just this language here, I cannot foresee me as your superintendent coming to you with a recommendation if I don't have all that information to show you and to feel comfortable that the district is not at risk. I would not bring that to you. So
I would still like language in the document that protects us.
Aren't we simply financing receivables? I mean, in this case, or in this case in particular, but we're dealing with deferrals. Deferral is a...
But if there's mid-year cuts and they're retroactive, they may never get the money they anticipated.
Yeah, but if they budget off the trigger.
Yeah. I mean, if you break... A loan can be a deferral of a receivable. Or the loan could be, we have this great program, and it's going to cost us this amount. Will the district finance our purchase of that on whatever terms and conditions? The context in which we're discussing loans is the cash flow shortfall based mm-hmm. upon the receivable. That's only one possibility
right.
based on the breadth of the language. To address Ms. Poulos's question, in practice, the way I would see this working is San Jose would make the request for a loan. The language, all it talks about now in terms of terms, is what the rate will be. That does not at all preclude the parties from saying and discussing what the additional terms and conditions of that
okay.
loan would be. Now, you could certainly add language here that says something to the effect of at a rate not less than and upon other mutually agreeable terms and conditions of the parties or something like that. I would not recommend trying to be more specific than that in terms of other terms and conditions, because this is going to be a case-by-case analysis, and the facts and circumstances are going to be different. The purposes of the loans may be different, and so you'll want to have the flexibility to say, under these circumstances, in this instance, if staff comes to you, like the superintendent said, they're likely going to come to you with the details and some discussion about if any additional terms and conditions that they think are appropriate to sufficiently protect the district's interest.
Yeah. And there is nothing that says, I mean, the language is may, and
yes.
So it's not shall, we
so
may
exactly.
do that, and depending upon the terms,
right.
we may or may not agree to the exactly. terms of
so
the loan.
So whether we change
but if we do, that all we're stating in this is that the interest rate shall be determined at not less than a trans rate.
Right. So whether you change the language as it is or not, if they make
still
a request for a loan and the district believes additional terms and conditions should be attached to that loan, that's what you can represent to San Jose. And then they have to make the business decision whether they want to take that loan from the district on those terms and conditions or seek that funding elsewhere.
Okay. Thank you. More?
That's other, all on loans.
Okay, other items then?
I just want explanation of what it means. On page 16 of 18, it says that the district access to charter school number item 18 on the annual visit, that the district can has access at any time,
mm-hmm.
but it says access does not, if the access does not unreasonably interfere with the programs. Can someone explain to me what that means?
So the intent of the language was, for example, during star testing or something of that nature, that obviously there's a need to, you know, prevent any sort of disruption to, you know, student testing or things like that. The intent here basically is not to restrict the district's access under any sort of normal circumstances, but just to, you know, provide some reasonable, you know, understanding that, you know, hopefully people will exercise common sense and, you know, not want to be talking in a classroom while people are testing is going on or something of that nature.
Okay. And then on number 17, I'm just going to make sure that it's the same question I asked for being a district of choice. It says home-to-school transportation will not be provided to regular school students. If it's called for by the in an IEP, you will provide transportation.
Yes, and yes, and that's why the term regular was used in this context to make that distinction.
It's the same question I asked for our mm-hmm. district of choice, just to make sure. And those were the only questions.
Should that be general ed students?
Yes.
Yeah.
General ed students instead
right.
of regular ed?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I like that better.
Do you have any?
Yeah.
You're done, Kim?
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker?
It's just quickly. When we talk about the loan in here, it talks about the fact that we will get a cash flow projection for 2 years. I'm just a bit surprised that with the information we received regarding the loan, that wasn't provided because...
Well, we'll get to that with the loan. What do you want to change the terminology of this?
Well, no, because right here it says the charter school will provide the district with cash flow projections for 2 years no later than 30 days prior.
That's
so
that's
and
so
I understand that's going forward.
Right.
What I'm saying is because we keep referring to this MOU that hasn't been approved, I was surprised that it wasn't even followed in that regard because there is serious questions about Edison's budget right now and how they're going to meet the program demands. When we went through our budgeting process, we basically did two budgets. Of course, the state said you can't calculate any budget cuts that we may do, but we did it anyway. And we do not have that for Edison. Right now, their budget, they're basically just going to make it, but what happens when there's further cuts? What happens when there's further deferrals? I just, at this point, do not see the school being feasible fiscally. And, you know, I'm sure it's no surprise that I will be voting no on the MOU because there's other things in here that I disagree with. But one thing I wanted to say to Kathy, I appreciate the hard work that you've had to do this summer. Somewhere along the line, things have gotten lost in terms of concerns that I have had regarding the management of the school and the students of the school. It has always been my intent to protect the school and make sure the school is managed correctly. One of the things I stated at the board meetings discussing the independent charter is, why now? What is the rush? Why not do this at the end of your current contract term? That way things like direct funding could have been in place. You wouldn't have spent a summer getting health benefits and payroll done. You would have had ample time, 2 years, to prepare for this and be ready to go. Even if it had been delayed 1 year to become effective next year. So I know you've had an incredible amount of work. But again, my concern has been the management of that school. And this is a perfect example of why I've had the questions. Why was this done so fast? Where was the absolute need to do this? So a lot of the stress that you have felt has been inflicted by the management company deciding not to do this in a reasonable, responsible rate. And so I applaud all of the work you've done. And I'm back. You remember me saying this to you when you made, Mr. Simmons, made the statement to Ms. Poulos, are you trying to bankrupt us? No. The decisions you have made on behalf of Edison Learning and as Edison is what's caused this. You know, I understand being directly funded would have cost you some, but that was the benefits and risk analysis that the school should have done as part of their decision to go independent. Was the potential loss of funds worth going independent? We're in a situation where, once again, you know, 2007-2008, we negotiated a contract to try and better differentiate what the district was responsible for. We ended it sooner at your request because you wanted to go independent, but now we're back in a situation pre-2007 where it's a complete mix of independent and dependent again. And it's not in your best interest, and it's not in the best interest of the district. Yes, maybe when you were part of the school district, and I say that in quotation marks, but when you were a dependent charter, we may have used our funds to cover shortfalls and deferrals. Fine. You know, the past is the past. You made the decision to go independent. The things going on now are part of being independent. And the money you got this time, well, and every time, is the money from the students of the rest of the district. Because this is money that we've put aside and taken from those funds. Because at the end of every year, Edison got all of their money. You got your ADA, you got your categoricals. Edison got paid for whatever invoices they gave us and then ran with the funds. So anything that was left at this district's office ending balance is from the other schools. And so this isn't the same as Monta Vista needing extra money because they've contributed to that ending balance. So that's all I have to say. Right.
No other changes or recommendations to the wording then if you're going to vote no? Okay.
I was just going to say item 11 is prescriptive on the special ed transportation. So it's actually worded in there, Ms. Paulus.
Special ed services.
Well, and the question I had there, I'm not going to ask since you brought it up. There was a question with special ed in the past, and I just want to make sure that we continue to have this the same type of oversight we've had in the past. Not trying to beat a dead horse, but want to make sure they continue to have speech therapy and extended school year, and that we go in more than once a year to make sure those things are happening. Because if a child goes a whole year without speech therapy, that could be very detrimental. So I just want to make sure we stay on top of that. And when I kept reading this, it kept saying 1 year, you know, at least 1 year. Do we have a plan on how often we're going to go in there in this MOU, or we're just saying at least 1 year?
I don't think we've talked about how we're going to implement it, but that certainly will be something we will discuss.
Okay.
All right. With respect to this item number 8, the Charter School Academy Operational Memo of Understanding, we've had considerable discussion about some of the wording of the MOU and that, and the attorneys of both staff has looked into wording and changes of wording. The attorneys have looked through all of this. Also, we've made some suggestions for some wording changes. I'd like you to turn to page 9 of 19 on the revised one that we have. I assume that it's not on the same page. I'm just looking at this revised one, and it deals with the audit issues, the annual financial audit as such. And just for clarification and you know, I don't care how you ultimately change the wording. I'd just like you to confer with the auditors to that wording, and this is just sort of a technicality thing that the audit, item number 1 in item C number 1, the audit of the accuracy of the financial statements, generally speaking, an audit done in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards doesn't attest to the accuracy. It attests to the reliability of the financial statements, so that really actually should be reliability. I don't know about item number 2. I personally don't like the term the audit of the charter school's attendance, but that may be appropriate. And then third is, again, done in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. It's an evaluation. I believe it's an evaluation of the charter school's internal controls and not an audit. Based on our discussion, so those are the only 2 items, and I'd just like you to confer with the auditors for that accuracy and then change it accordingly. On page 10, we've talked about inserting in the first paragraph, just above where it's highlighted, interest to be calculated at not less than the Los Angeles County tax and revenue anticipation notes, and no other changes on that page. And then to item 17 with respect to transportation and the reference to regular school students, changing it to general education school students. Is that appropriate?
General education students.
General education school students.
No, it's just general education students.
General education students. Thank you. Okay. And then I have no other changes.
Can I get clarification? Disbursements of funds that was recommended, is that something you want added?
Which one? Where?
Page 10. Disbursements of funds. Can you read that? How you had that? Is that something you want added to that as well?
I said disbursement of funds. Once the board approves and decides that we are going to go ahead and give a loan, disbursement of funds requires the signed acknowledgement of the terms and repayment plan by the charter school president and treasurer. That was my suggestion.
I think that's a great suggestion for a nonprofit.
I don't have a problem with it.
No problem with it.
Do you have a problem with it?
No.
I don't have a problem with it.
Okay. Thank you. All right. With that, I'll entertain a motion for this item, please. Is there a second? I'll second it. It's been moved by Eileen Miranda Jimenez and seconded by Steve Cox to approve the operational memorandum of understanding between the district and the San Jose Charter Academy as amended, as noted. And all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. And I'm voting no, knowing that the Edison Learning Inc. would take it over, so not to close the school, but Edison Learn, and then that would give them more time to figure out how they were going to financially maintain their school.
And the motion passes 3-2 with Polis and Shoemaker voting no. Next item is the San Jose Charter Academy Facilities Use Agreement. Do you have comments to this?
It was part of the PowerPoint.
Right, the PowerPoint. So all right. Anything more to add to that? Nothing.
Any questions that you might have?
Do you have questions?
Ms.
Shoemaker?
This question will be for Mr. Sims.
For who? Me?
No, Sims.
Oh, all right.
Section 15, is that language.
What page?
Six. For partial damage and total destruction, is that language required by law? Because I'm concerned with, especially under total destruction, where it says immediately upon the effective date of the damage, the district will provide a school facility to the charter school as soon as possible so as to avoid any interruption in the educational program of the charter school. At this point, we don't have available facilities, so how would that work?
I don't know the answer to your question. I don't think most of that language is required by law. The language about immediately provide alternative facilities, I'm not aware that that is anywhere in the Charter School Act per se, and I'll invite Jerry to come up and give his take on it. But, you know, it may derive from just the general obligation to provide reasonable facilities, and how that would actually work in practice if the facilities were destroyed and the district had to provide other facilities. I haven't had that particular experience. I don't know if you have, Jerry.
Edgewood only has about 1,000 kids.
But is there any requirement that we would treat them any different than any other school in the district that would be, if any other school in the district were destroyed?
Not that I'm aware of.
But we would disperse those students.
Yeah. And
put
so
portables out. So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe portables.
I mean, what would be reasonable alternative facilities? I mean, under those circumstances, kind of depends, I guess, on the situation and what's available. Obviously, if you don't have another single site closed school that you can move those kids to, then that would not be the option.
And would it be, I believe when we've had discussion in the past on this, we're required to provide facilities for students that reside within the district? Or is it just the entire school in general?
Man, this is one of those questions you need
right
to add
now,
here.
You mean?
My understanding is that for the most part you have an obligation for in-district students. Mm-hmm. But it is not unusual in the terms of a facilities use agreement for a district to provide facilities to house all of the students who are expected to attend the charter school.
And again, this isn't a matter of not wanting to provide facilities is if it's not available.
Yeah. I mean, the specific language you ask about you know, providing the alternative sites in the event that these are destroyed, I'm not aware that that's anywhere specifically in the law.
Mr. Simmons, do you have any?
Simply that under Proposition 39, the district has an obligation to provide facilities for the in-district kids, as you indicated. And so the issue becomes, if there was total destruction, what would be the practical answer? I think the practical answer would be that you would take insurance proceeds that you would receive from the total destruction of the school site, and you would probably put some portables to house the kids. I think that would be the logical solution. That's probably the only thing that anyone could ever do in any reasonable period of time, given all the restrictions on building permanent facilities. I mean, that's not going to happen overnight. So,
thank you, Ms. Polis. No, I'm sorry. Did you have anything more?
No.
Ms. Polis.
On page one, in use of school site, the room numbers, I just think they're incorrect. According to, at least according to the site map, We have classroom 302, 303, 101, 102, and 103. And there isn't, we, it says on page one in that last paragraph that we have, that 301 is one of them, but I don't see a 301. So is that supposed to be 103, correct? So 101, 103. Yeah, so 302 and 303. It should be 303.
103. So what should it be?
303. Instead of 301, it should be 303.
Okay, or 302 and 303.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I'm just looking at the map and how it's numbered, so it may be numbered incorrectly.
The map is incorrect?
I'm not sure.
I sent somebody out to actually look at the numbers, but we will be more than happy to get these immediately tomorrow right back to staff.
Okay.
That's just a combination
of two rooms from 301.
Yeah, no, we're not going to add
it. Five,
you're just going to enter into this contract before it's signed the correct rooms.
Right,
that's
and,
all that's interesting.
And the reason I'm asking is I know that two of those classrooms by the county are double classrooms.
Yeah.
And so we just want to make sure that they're not going to be really happy if they're assigned to a smaller classroom.
No. But basically the existing.
Yeah, as long as you get that back, that's great.
All right. Mr. Spence?
Yeah.
I have one more thing.
Sorry.
About the kitchen, I think you answered this question. We're going to be paying for the full custodian, but it sounds like we, as a district, are going to be the only ones using that kitchen, and we're going to be preparing the food for those students, and that's why we're paying for the 100% of the custodians in the kitchen.
Right. The same custodians that would be taking care of these five classrooms also would take care of the kitchen.
That's actually, if I could piggyback, my question, because on 10, we have the agreement for nutrition services, which is an annual agreement that's renewable, and that's where there's language in there about the kitchen. And so I don't know why we would have, in the facilities agreement, the charter school will allow the district to utilize the kitchens of the school site free of charge, you know, how the district shall reimburse the charter school for a prorated share, because that's really part of the nutritional service agreement. Am I wrong?
No, because we're talking about the actual use of space and facilities versus contracted services.
Right, but let's say we don't contract, like after a year or whatever, we are not contracted with nutritional services, then why would we be using the kitchen over here? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's my question. Is that if we didn't have a contract with nutritional services, then somebody else needs to be using the kitchen to deliver the nutritional services, not the district.
We could add that language.
Or take out those two sentences.
Well, we want to be clear that since we say that San Jose has the exclusive use of their occupancy, that they are going to give us free use of the kitchens, and we can add as long as West Covina is providing nutrition services.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would revert back. I think.
Yeah, because otherwise, because the agreement that we're asked to approve on 10 is an annual agreement that's renewable, and so if we didn't do that, then I guess we go occupy the kitchen and say, "Huh, good luck getting food to the kids." I don't know what we do.
We wouldn't provide custodial services and supplies for the kitchen,
right?
Which they utilize for food services, if we are not providing that. So that language needs to be added there.
Okay.
If you decided to contract out for that, then someone else.
Yeah. If somehow that nutritional agreement didn't get renewed.
Page three.
Use the school site.
And then about the supplies, providing supplies and custodial services on page three of the facilities use agreement.
Again, we can just add.
Well, you need to add while a nutritional agreement is in place.
Is that good?
Mm-hmm. Okay, where are we paying for custodial services? While this agreement is in force? Is that what you're saying?
While there's a nutrition services agreement in place or in force, whatever. Does that make sense, Mr. Sims? Or?
Yes.
And Mr. Sims, is that right? Trevin there still?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Well,
I think in Section 6A,
it's clear the district will provide custodial services and supplies for the kitchen, which they utilize for food services in non-charter mm-hmm. school occupied areas of the site. Well,
that one's clear, but it's not clear on the front part.
Which
the
one?
Kitchen on one at the bottom. Because it says the charter school will allow the district to utilize the kitchens at the school site free of charge. It doesn't say anything about the nutritional agreement.
Well, I thought there were just adding pursuant to.
Yeah, the right. Yeah.
So that makes it clear. So where was the other area?
Well, that was, Ms. Polo said it was the supplies.
Well, in custodial service on page 3. A,
3A. It does say food services.
Well, I know, but it also says the district will provide mm-hmm. custodial services and supplies for the kitchen, kitchens which they utilize. Well, if we're not utilizing them, obviously we're not providing custodial services.
Oh, yeah. No, it's redundant.
Mm-hmm. So I think
that, part's
that line is okay. fine.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah, any other questions or... I'm not sure I even got the change that we're talking about. We resolved it, that it's...
It.
You got it. All right. All right. Is there... let's see. With respect to item 9, San Jose Charter Academy facilities use agreement, is there a motion for this matter, please?
I'll second.
It's been moved by Eileen Miranda Jimenez, seconded by Mike Spence, to approve the facilities use agreement between the district and San Jose Charter Academy. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
For the same reasons I stated earlier about the two classrooms that I thought we could lease out.
That's fine. The motion passes 3-2 with Polis and Shoemaker voting against it. Number 10 is the memo of agreement for nutritional services between the San Jose Charter Academy and the West Covina Unified School District.
I have a question on this.
Mr. Spence?
What's our estimated profit off of this for the district? Or surplus revenue, whatever word you want to use.
I think for the current year, it's slight. I don't know the exact number. It's a small dollar amount. We're probably running $10,000 or so extra, but I have to double-check the number.
I'll go ahead and move this.
It's been moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Eileen Maria Jimenez. To enter an agreement with San Jose Charter Academy for Nutrition Services. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? I hear no opposition. Motion passes 5-0. Next item, you know what? In lieu of the fact that we've got the attorneys here, can we, let's object to discussing item number 24, since we're in the mode of San Jose Edison, do the resolution of for cash advance San Jose Academy, and then we'll talk about the unaudited actuals. Those are the last two items on the agenda. But
so we're going to do 24?
Unless on their own time they'd like to stick around and talk about unaudited actuals, but... All right. So.
That'd be a no.
All right. So we'll move to item number 24 on the agenda. You want to talk first, or do you want, or we beat this sort of to death, or you want anybody have any comments, or do you want any? You want to make comments first? Okay.
I'd like to Mrs. thank Kaplan. Board members for getting their questions to me early today, because I think we're in a position to answer them. I think the first thing I want to say publicly is. It's not my style to bring things to you after the fact, and I'm not comfortable with it, but it is what it is. And as we talk about this, I think I'd like to separate the how from the why and kind of focus on the why and why this is on the agenda tonight. And I'd like to ask Ms. Baston to go over some financials that might give you a better understanding of the why and the protection of the district if we should agree to this loan. So there's two issues. One, it's after the fact, and I recognize the frustration and upset that the board is. And then there is, why is it on the agenda? And then the third question, I think, for you that you've asked is, if you don't vote for it, what happens? So I'd like to start with the financial pieces to this so you can better understand what position the district's in if they don't. Is that
that makes sense.
Thank you.
As was stated earlier today, you know, the reason really we're talking about all the cash flow problems is with the deferrals. And so the first example here, and trying to get it in perspective, in the fiscal year, that should be the first page in your package. In the fiscal year 9-10, about 22% of the revenues were deferred. When we went to 10-11 last year, we just finished, over 28% was deferred. And now in 11-12, it's expected to be a 38% deferral. So those are a huge increase, and really where it's hurting our cash flow. When you see budgets and you see financial statements, they're talking about total revenue. And of that total revenue, 38% won't be paid in the current fiscal year. And I apologize to the audience for the tiny, tiny numbers, but hopefully the colors kind of will help along. This first example is with San Jose in the current fiscal year, what their cash flow projections were or are currently for us. Now, again, their cash flow projections were based on worst case, where we talked about that 330 cut per ADA. That's what this was based on, because we wanted worst case. So San Jose worked with us on that. And July, again, we ended up at the very bottom. It says ending cash balance, $247,000. That's they had that money, again, I believe it was stated, because Edison hadn't been paid yet, their $463,000. So we had money on hand, but if we wouldn't have even been able to pay back the money we were contracted to repay. In August, we start with that $247,000. They have additional inflow of the only $83,000. They have expected expenses for all their expenses, payroll and other expenses of $784,000. That would run them into a shortfall of that $452,000. I did authorize it. I take full responsibility for authorizing this, not authorizing a loan, but making the funding happen in order to pay payroll. Why we immediately brought that information to the superintendent, the $600,000, which gave them $147,000 roughly, because we didn't know the exact numbers, was an estimate to move forward. Now, as we did state in the updates that you have, we're pretty good in September because you can see our cash inflow now goes from $83,000 to $835,000. Allows us to make it through the month of September. If San Jose, if the board grants them the $600,000 cash advancement on the receivables, we can make it through October again. It'll leave them $197,000. And then you see the yellow square for the audience. They would need approximately another $600,000 to make it through November. Again, because their cash inflow, the second line is only $78,000. October, they got almost $1.6 million. In December, that kind of goes forward again. There's really not that large of a deferral, $685,000 inflow. January, another $713,000. So again, they're just kind of above break even. And then in February, they get another catch-up. They have $1.67 million, which would allow them to pay back, and that's the bluish color square, the $1.2 million from the receivable advances. That gets them just about to zero. It'll leave them only $4,000. Now, if we roll forward, we get into very large deferrals here. You'll see March through June, through July, actually, it's very small, $373,000, only $138,000, up to $445,000, back to $243,000, $105,000. Then in August, they get these release of previous funds, gives you the $1.2 million. So during that period, March through July, is going to have a problem because we have those large receivables out there requiring some type of loan or cash funding advance against those receivables. Then again, in August and September, they should be able to get paid those amounts and repay that loan. Now, the question is, what happens if they, if San Jose, we decide that it wasn't appropriate, we don't want to loan them that money on their receivables, we want to take that back immediately. That's the next page. So basically, they got that, the first $600,000 from us that you see in yellow. We would be taking that back, which is the blue square, and the square right above that, $600,000, they would need some other funding source to make up those dollars because they need to be able to make the September payroll. Now, we just went through the MOU. The MOU says they have to have 15 days advance notice to the board of any loans they're going to enter into. They're going to need this funding in their bank probably between the 23rd and 25th of the month in order to make payroll cash available to them. And right now, we're, you know, getting very close to that cutoff, and they don't have the loan yet. So this is kind of a exercise, a case study. Is it practical if we take back the money, they can get that money? That's something up for discussion amongst the boards. Then again, just like the previous slide, they're going to need money in November. They'll be able to repay whoever they get these funds from in February, just like the previous slide, and still have the same deferrals, causing them to have a cash shortfall against the receivables of the $1.7 million, which would be paid back again in August and September, the same flow. And the next slide is, in looking at this and trying to brainstorm and problem solve, what are the other opportunities here? What else could happen? How could we improve this picture at all? San Jose found that they could file for an exemption for the deferrals. It's not a full exemption. What it would do is bring in probably about $300,000 more than they are currently would be getting in that period between March and July. So I believe they file for that in January. And if it's approved, it would go in effect in March. So they would be receiving a little bit more money in revenue. And that way, they only owe the million, only need a advance for $1,350,000 instead of $1.7 million. Now, you know, one of the concerns is that's great, that's the San Jose side, but what about West Covina? What does that mean to us? Okay. So this is our cash flow, and what we told we'd be bringing back to the board on a regular basis. So the first slide here. This is if we give the board grant San Jose that advance on the receivables in August and November, like we just showed they needed, and allow them to repay it in February, this is the impact to our district. And basically, we would have the bottom. This is the ending cash per Saks. You can see we have a very strong bottom line still with the numbers. This provides for the loans both in August and in November, and then the repayment in February. So it does has a lot of detail. It shows where all the revenue sources are, the expense sources, and then under other transactions is really our change in receivables due us from the state, other revenue, and what our payables are out there from prior years of paying or prior periods. So I know this has a lot of numbers, so I wanted to stop and see if there's any questions with this, make sure we're grounded in the right place before we go forward.
Let's keep moving with this presentation, and then we'll go back.
So if the next slide, then, is if we grant the advance for August only, and we allow them to repay that in February, what this is, again, the impact to us is not significant in the overall dollars. We still have the same ending cash, pretty much. So there's no change with the MOU agreement that they have to pay us interest in excess of what we would lose from that investment. We would actually get our money back and have that extra interest. The next slide is the option if it's borrowed in August and repaid in September right away, because we don't grant that receivable or that advance on their cash, excuse me, what would happen to us? Again, you see these dollar amounts because we're in millions of dollars, tens of millions. It's very small in a percentage of our overall cash holdings. The next slide, I think, is the big question. What if we have mid-year triggers? What happens? So the first slide is we have mid-year triggers, and I'm going to jump kind of forward. In the back of your package, you have a single page, and it talks about what the triggers are. And really, the triggers, it'll be determined December 15th. The state director of finance is going to look at where they are and where they project they're going to be for the rest of the year compared to what their assumptions were when they built the budget. And if they feel that the current projections are within $1 billion of their original budget, nothing happens. If they feel that the projections are going to be $1 billion to $2 billion less, there's certain triggers, but they don't impact our district. It's tier two that would affect us. So if their projection shows that it'll be greater than $2 billion off from what they originally budgeted, there's two things that'll happen. Up to a 4% reduction in the revenue limit, and that's based on how much they're off between that $2 billion to $4 billion. And also, we would lose our transportation. So the maximum impact to us will be we could lose the $2.3 million in revenue limit and $226,000 in transportation. The graphs at the bottom show you kind of that sliding scale because it's between $2 billion and $4 billion. We use worst case in the chart and in our calculations here. So at the bottom, when it's the revenue limit, as it goes from the 2.4 on the horizontal axis, it shows vertically how much the district would lose over those time periods. Or in the red is an example in ADA. So originally, we had our original budget. We thought we could lose up to $330 per ADA. Now the maximum appears to be about $260, $269. So when we look at the chart, this mid-year triggers with a cash advance of 600, which is page 8. Again, that trigger is going to take place. We assume, worst case, it'll be calculating December and take effect in January. And we distributed that $2 million reduction over the same distribution ratio is the revenue coming in, because we have a lot of revenue deferred. So we're assuming that they're going to allow some of that deferral also of what's owed, because it should net out against the future. So the full $2 million isn't reduced here. It's a proportion of it. About 38% is deferred. But again, in the overall picture with that $2 million spread over time, the total impact is pretty small to the district in the total dollar amount. And the last slide is the same type of information, but what if we did the two $600,000 loans, the one in August and the one in November? What would happen? And again, the numbers are pretty much the same. So percentage-wise, total dollars, it isn't large. It's more of like you're discussing the philosophy of what it is.
Just to clarify, when you're showing the San Jose budget, mm-hmm. that has been developed with the trigger figures. So there's not another budget for San Jose because this is with the trigger.
This cash flow that we're showing
I don't see their budget. There's just their
cash flow. Is that based on the trigger funds or?
Correct. This cash flow was based off their the budget with the 330 reduction. So it's actually a greater reduction than what's actually predicted at this time.
All right, so then why would there necessarily be the need for a loan in November?
It's because it's a cash base. So the revenue's there, but it's the deferral.
I understand the deferral part, but at the same time, they're going off numbers that are much deeper in cuts than, you know, it's reflected here as far as the revenues that are coming in. So wouldn't the revenues be higher clear through December?
They can be, but not in any significance against the $600,000. So overall for the year, they have about 1,000 students, and we predicted the 330, so it's about a $300,000 cut. So less than $30,000 per month is what's calculated, you know, would be already built into this.
You know, if we were having cash flow problems, Mr. Cox, is okay if I ask?
Go ahead, please.
If you're having cash flow problems, you know, wouldn't we look at things in the 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 series that we could defer a certain amount of time?
For purchases, correct?
Yeah. I mean, when we do that and defer on, you know, whatever those might be.
And this would be probably better for San Jose to answer because we didn't
build
the budget.
Well, that's what we would do.
We do. We look at those type of things. Like you said, we said go back. We'll look at all the contractors we have on staff right now. Is it necessary? Look at hiring before we do it.
And you call them and say, look, you're going to get your money 2 weeks later.
Right. Yeah, in these cases, it's months later.
Yeah, well, I know who the vendor is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get them on the hook for.
Do you have other comments, or you want to?
No, that's all I have.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Not right now.
No, nothing? Do you have any comments? Yeah.
I just have a question about your numbers. The all the sheets aren't the same. There's on prior year account payables. There's zero on some. For August and September, I think it is, and others, there's $100,000 on each of them. On page 4, prior year accounts payable payments,
mm-hmm.
there's $100,000 and $100,000, but on page 2 and on page 3, they're not there. Can you just tell me what that is?
Yeah, it's the same here. So on page 2, the prior year accounts payable in July is the 454, 100, 100, 859. On page 3, it still has on the cash outflow of the prior years, it has the same numbers. Am I misunderstanding?
Yes. And then on 4,
uh-huh.
there's $100,000 in August and in September.
Oh, okay, the out years. Okay.
So, but they're not there on the other pages.
That they should be consistent, I believe.
Yeah. So which one is it?
No, it's on some of the others.
Okay, well it's not on.
It's not on.
Yeah.
One.
It's not on 2.
It's on 2.
Right.
It's
2 and 3.
It's not on 3.
Mm-hmm.
4. Yeah, okay.
It's on 4.
Right.
And then those are the only ones there are.
Right. They're the San Jose. What we're trying to do is project out into the future months. This turned into the accruals, and to be consistent, they should have been on all of them. You're correct. As well as the 684, you're correct. What we had originally done is just shown what revenues were coming in for those expenses, and we made the change here to show that these also expenses would carry forward as well, and they should have been carried forward on the other pages.
And what are the prior year account payable payments?
Let me think a second. These would be their outstanding. You probably know better the detail, Kathy.
Right. It's Edison's payment. They have not been paid.
Yeah, but doesn't that come out already out of
that would be separate.
MOU?
This is your cash flow, so what you pay, not what we're paying.
Yeah, because we paid that. We pay that.
Let me see.
We pay the Edison payment.
Which is down here.
Right, when the MOU is done.
It's down here.
Now, yes. I mean, we pay that Edison
right,
payment. So I don't understand what you're floating.
That's down here. The 463.7.
That's prior year payable, right?
Right. That's what we
West
owe
Covina's
now. They just
carried our profit we should have kept, right, the 356.
So cash flow.
We should already have. And then we pay the 453, right?
Something else.
That's what my understanding of that MOU was.
Well, 463.
Prior year account payable. We have some, Edison's owed. We have... I think speech is in here for $150,000.
But how is Edison owed if that came out of prior year revenue?
It's just set up as a payable. They haven't received their revenue yet because of the deferrals.
I understand that, but that's from prior year revenue.
Right.
This shouldn't be affecting your cash flow now.
It does because it hasn't been paid. When you set it up at June 30th, you set up a payable to Edison, and you haven't really paid them. You've already expensed it in 2010-11, but you haven't paid it. So the cash flow is affected by that.
Why would the cash flow be affected by it, though?
Because it's cash.
Because we're putting the
non-cash use of it. It's an expenditure in the prior year that didn't require cash.
Right. It's just set up as a payable
right,
to them.
But so we are putting the cash there.
So you're going to pay them this year
the
for last year's money, $1.5 million.
Well, no, it's not all Edison. There's various things.
Read the MOU, though.
Charges
read the MOU
for speech or various accounts payable.
I thought an MOU we approved.
You probably see it.
Yeah.
That's what we pay.
But not this is what they're saying. They paid $1.5 million, and then you have $100,000 and $100,000 in August and September.
I see they have this.
And
right.
So what's that?
I think, well, DMS Services did my cash flows for me. And they just spread out the payables as though they were paying some of the payables. The payables are reflected against the accounts receivables of, you know, we have accounts receivables for last year. We have not received that cash, $1.7 million. So.
Well, this is more than $1.7
million.
In payables. Well, I was right. It's right about 1.7. And then you're not paying anything in November, December, January, February, March,
well,
April, May,
because,
June, July.
Because he felt that they all needed to be paid. I think Edison has agreed to October 14th. So
okay, but there's two in August and September. What are those? I'm sorry.
The
I'm
two which
calm
ones?
Down.
The
100,000 and the 100,000.
It's just.
It was a placeholder because we really don't know. We haven't budgeted out to the new fiscal year. August and September was new. We just tried to put in a kind of an average of what it would be as a placeholder in the August and September period.
When you're asking for a loan and cash flow, have it a placeholder,
you
know, well, why don't you put the placeholder on the back end and then there's no need for, you know.
Well, that is part of it.
I mean, page four.
If you're using placeholders.
I'm just looking at the ones I'm looking at.
The loan in November, is that what you're saying? I'm not quite
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a placeholder, so I'm a little confused. If it's a placeholder and it's messing up your cash flow and it doesn't really mean anything, move it to the end of the year.
Well, let me try to clarify if I can. We brought in the revenue because at the cash on hand, he had the inflow, and that said how we were paying this. But we didn't want to misrepresent this and show that you had income with no expenses. And they haven't budgeted yet into the new fiscal year. So, again, as a placeholder, as looking at what the average of their payroll is, we brought that forward. And then we said looking at their expenses, because you have all these other expenses that aren't paid, at least $100,000 at a minimum. We didn't want to put a really high number of $800,000 because, again, it's not budgeted. And looking at the payables, referring here with fiscal services, these are other expenses. Like we explained, that we're expensed but not paid for, so we're paying for it in the new fiscal year. A lot of things that come later with special education, the SELPA, and those type of items, as well as if you have anything with Edison, would be included in these type of things.
Can you
even
tell
our
me
district have
to
payables
expense against the current year budget. They already expensed against last year's budget. They just have not been paid. It's
a cash flow problem.
A cash flow problem. So. We will postpone paying as long as we can, but the Carl DMS Services is just recognizing that you do have a payable. So if we paid these, this is how he calculated the cash. Normally,
yeah, but those aren't set numbers. You're telling me those aren't set numbers, though.
Well, those there is a set of accounts payable.
No, I understand that, but you're saying that those numbers and those months aren't set numbers.
Yeah, it's just the August 12th, September 12th. So they have documentation for the current fiscal year. It's when you get to the far right-hand side, we leave July 12 and go into the new fiscal year, August 12 and September 12, where we're getting the other revenues in, is where we put a placeholder only for those outflows for August 12 and September 12.
I think what are you saying?
So those are the only real numbers?
$1,000 item, is that what you mean?
Well, no, I'm trying to figure out your cash flow because, okay, if these aren't real payments, you know, that you have to make in August, September, October, but what's the amount?
The placeholders. August 11, September 11, October 12 October 11 are based on real receivables, real numbers. Is that correct, Kathy? Because this is coming from DMS.
Right, but we held off. We have not paid this, but this is a place in time when he created this. So with the intent that these payables would be paid, Edison was originally to be paid by September 16th, I believe, but they've held off to October.
What percentage of it is Edison? The
463,000, and then
so only a third of it, because it's 1.5. I'm rounding it down.
Part of it's district.
Right, the OS as well.
Part of it's Edison. Part of it, I believe, is LACO. There is
fixed assets that we set up as a payable.
And they're all due in October?
Not necessarily. You could wait till June.
We can wait. West Covina Unified
no,
could
joking.
Wait.
I, that was a joke. I'm sorry.
Aleco can.
This is, you know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, mm-hmm. I'm just trying, I mean.
I guess what I could say is if you were thinking of a credit card, you have these bills. You can pay $10 this month. You could pay $50 next month. He just set it up as how he felt the payments would be made. Now, they don't necessarily have to be made this way.
Right, but that affects your cash flow on these months where you're saying that you're going to be short and you need these loans. If you're setting up how you want to pay it, okay, that's fine, but okay, well, maybe you ought to pay it in February and March, and then you don't have the cash flow problems in October.
You wouldn't need the loan in November.
I think that would be at that point we would determine how much, you know, depending on the accounts payable that was made, and maybe it's $550,000, or this was just an estimated cash flow
right.
of what our, you know, the estimated amounts that would be needed, and he's trying to be as upfront. Basically, he told me today that it's about a $1.6 million loan over a year's time, but it's, you know, paying you back and getting it, you know, in worst case scenario throughout the time where cash would be low. So,
if you didn't pay that back, you wouldn't,
I'm done.
Or if you paid it back, not it's like the $859,000.
Yeah, I understand.
If you didn't pay that in October, you wouldn't need the $600,000 loan in November.
Yeah.
And then if you waited until you actually had the cash,
I have no idea.
And paid it back,
prior receivable,
and then you wouldn't be paying us interest either.
If that's possible, we will hold off paying as much as we can. But
did you have to pay the 601 in July and the 440 and the 100,000? Because if you didn't pay those, then you wouldn't have needed the $600,000 loan from us.
I don't know.
Because you said there was flexibility there. And if those weren't paid, you would have had the money. You wouldn't have needed that $600,000 loan.
Right. Well, we still would need some of it. There's still a partial amount available. Like right now, we do have, with the $600,000, we still have $1 million in cash right now. But if you take the $600 back, we'll only have $400,000, which $200,000 is PERS and STRS payments.
Okay, but if you didn't make those two payments, it would have been almost $600,000. So you would have been in the same place in cash flow. If you're saying that's like a credit card mm-hmm. and you only have to pay a little bit at a time. So
well, I let me rephrase that. I'm saying that that's an option if the vendor accepts that, depending
right.
on the payable.
Right.
Okay. Well, I just thought you...
I get that.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's why I'm trying to figure out what those were, and there's no real firm numbers. They're guesstimates on paying prior year receivables.
I can get that information for you.
I guess for me, for tonight, I asked for this information because we didn't have it before, and we've been asking for the information. It's hard for me to make a recommendation to the board if that money is sitting there and available, then why are we mm-hmm. borrowing from us? My understanding from everything that's been presented to me is there is no money there, but if the money is sitting in account,
There wasn't at the time of payroll. There was $247,000 at the time payroll had to be ran. The payroll didn't come in until 5 days later. I mean, the revenue didn't come in until after the fact. That's
right, and the payroll, and what's the total payroll? The total payroll is what?
Say that again?
The total payroll is what, 500?
About 400 and something. Mm-hmm.
So there's 454.
So you didn't need 600. To make payroll, you didn't need 600 grand. To make payroll with 247 in the bank or whatever, you only needed,
well, I
you know,
think Carl
200, right? 220?
Well, I think what Carl was trying to do is project over a year's time and come up with amounts. And we were asked to provide a cash flow, and this is the cash flow that he provided.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I'll be quite upfront. Maybe it could have been a $500,000 loan or a $450,000 loan. At the time, this is what he provided. There was time restraints.
Well, and I don't want to get into that because apparently people have known for a couple months about this, so I don't want to get into the time restraint issue again because I'll just get madder.
All right. Ready?
I just have another question on four. When you look at July, the ending balance of $28,393, and then you go to the beginning balance, it's $303,668. The last three numbers don't calculate.
Are you looking at July 12?
I'm looking at page number four.
Yes.
And July 12.
Okay, so we have beginning cash on hand at $303?
Right.
And I'm sorry, only if I follow along.
So ending cash balance is $28,393?
$38,058.
Are we on the same page?
Number four.
We are on number four. I'm sorry?
Ending in June.
Yeah.
The ending in June is the $28,393.
The $303. I'm not sure.
What he's talking about, this is ending balance. It should roll.
Yeah, the cash
just
balances
like
are all wrong.
Yeah. Yes.
Cash balance.
So, yeah, you're right. It flows, they're corrected up until July 12, where at the end of June should have gone up to 303, is correct. And then the last couple months here are not correct.
I guess for me, coming into this meeting, I thought we had accurate information, and I can't make a recommendation.
Update this so that we can run back and do this. We may have pulled the wrong page when we were in a rush this afternoon to do this.
I guess what are the other options that we have if the board needs to get more accurate information to make this recommendation?
Well, with updating these schedules, we can do this. You know, if you guys want to take a 10-minute break, we can update these numbers so you can have that.
Again, we're asking the board to do this retroactively, and we're still not bringing them accurate information.
Well, I apologize for the clerical error here, and it may be when we picked up the file to photocopy, we picked the wrong one. Again, so I can go back
and do
this.
But that's not the only thing. These prior year accounts payable numbers, which are unclear as well. I mean, there's...
I think the board's asking questions that we're not getting answers that we understand, and so it's very hard to make a recommendation to go forward. Maybe the recommendation should be that we come back to an emergency meeting where you can maybe even bring Carl and have an opportunity to share this information with the board so we understand it, because I can't recommend without having accurate numbers and fair understanding of that to loan the money.
Yeah, I'm not willing to approve this.
This is disappointing.
All right. We're done,
Kim. I'm looking at these. Page four is incorrect. Page three is correct.
But I think the bigger concern is the payable payments. If they haven't been paid, is that money sitting there?
Right.
And if the money's sitting there, it changes the amount of money you would need from the Board of Education.
I just want to.
I'm done. I can tell you, I did check. I have verified the cash. We have. West Covina at one point.
I promise it's not
it's
not
going
to be asking more numbers.
Go ahead. All right. Just hold off on this for just a minute. We've got one more comment, and then we're ready to move on.
It's basically one more question. Everybody's brought it up about how the $600,000 was transferred out of the district without authorization. So I would like... as part of this, to get the board policy on how money is transferred. And Mr. Spence has mentioned that it's happened before, so I'm assuming there is some sort of board policy and procedure that can be given, and what we're going to do in the future to make sure that this
I've actually
happening.
Already contacted our external auditor mm-hmm. to do a review of our process and procedures and internal controls, as well as making sure that there's dual dual signatures on things. I've asked him to do that kind of a audit for us. He did tell me in the past when they do an audit, that is something they look at, and he doesn't feel that in the past there has been any breach. But I have asked him to come in because that would be the person to do that.
Perfect.
All right. Well, let's move on with this then. All right. Yeah, that's okay. All right. Thank you very much, ladies. Okay. Let's move on with this resolution for cash advance to the San Jose Charter Academy. Does anybody want to make a motion on this?
I guess I want to make a motion based on I want to put it on here that we schedule a meeting for early next week where we can answer your questions and not have you make this recommendation tonight. I'm not comfortable making it tonight.
Actually, we have a memorandum of understanding that has a process in there. And so maybe we should actually follow the process.
That process now that it's been approved, and we'll go through that process.
I think that
we still have the outstanding 600,000.
I think my concern with the process, and again, I want to be able to bring those numbers to you because I'm not comfortable right now, is will that process, will you be able to function with that process? Because the one thing we're not prepared to do is to take over San Jose this week. So I recognize I'm putting you on the spot, but I guess we just need more information in terms of making this recommendation. If we go through the process, I think we could be putting San Jose at harm. But I would not recommend it unless I felt were being protected.
First of all, I don't think we're the ones that did that. But
I agree, but
I'm sorry. I apologize. I just wanted to ask the board. I understand the board's need for additional information. I understand the need for another meeting and all of that. Is it possible, though, just so that the school isn't put in any risk, is it possible, I guess one of two options, either would you take verbal notice tonight as part of the board meeting that pursuant to the MOU that we would be pursuing as an option an outside loan, not to say that's the school's preference, but in terms of meeting the 15-day notice requirement in the MOU, the only concern I have is obviously if the school was going to go in that direction and pursue an outside, they need to, you know, they need to be on that tomorrow just have any chance of being able to make payroll. So I don't know whether that is acceptable for notice. It doesn't say that it has to be in writing, but I guess I wanted to ask, is that
any objections to that? No. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, then we'll table this item. I have no motion on this item, and the superintendent's recommendation is to table this till further action. Available, and she'll coordinate with us as far as the appropriate timing and timetable. All right, next item on the agenda is the unaudited actuals, financial reports.
Yes, hot in here.
Want to explain?
Anybody have anything to say about it?
No questions?
Yes, no, maybe.
Do you want to give an overview?
I mean, we've gone. We have.
Okay.
We're fine with it.
Okay.
I think. Anybody have any questions?
No. Any actuals?
Huh?
Hope they're right.
Hope they're. No, we haven't yet. Not yet. I haven't done anything on it yet. I was just waiting for a report. We don't have any prepared report or anything other.
No.
Further explanation or anything.
Just the update that was provided.
Just the update.
If you have the chart that had the comparison from the estimated year-end actuals.
Yeah.
So the ending fund balance increased by $1.7 million.
Yeah.
There's something to that effect. As a result of, I'm sorry?
Yes, $1.6 million.
But how did it change with the $600,000?
What's that?
How did it change with the $600,000 that's now left?
It doesn't have any effect. This is June 30th.
That's the last fiscal year. This is the new fiscal year. And the majority of those dollar variance was in the restricted and in the books and supplies, the $4,000 and the $5,000 of services and other expenditures.
Right. It's moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Steve Cox, to approve the audited actual financial report for 2010-2011 as presented. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Any other board discussion? Nothing. Dates to remember, back to school nights at Cameron and Walnut Grove, Coronado, California, West Coast, as noted, and the next board meeting is September 27th, and we are adjourned at 10:25.